It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. It's been almost 3 years since the first lockdown, when communities across the country had to stay indoors to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. Everything went virtual: work, school, and your health. Telehealth, something that was used pre-pandemic, became more commonly used. 3 years later, where does it stand? Stephanie Wikstrom is founder and psychotherapist at the Counseling and Wellness Center of Pittsburgh. Stephanie, welcome to The Confluence.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Heather Tomko is a disability advocate and outreach coordinator for the National Center on Family Support at the University of Pittsburgh. Heather, welcome back to The Confluence.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be here.
And Dr. Ken Nischel is Division Chief of Pediatric Ophthalmology and Strabismus and the Medical Director of Digital Health at UPMC Children's. Dr. Ken, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Access for people for health care is the main thing. Obviously, we have a lot of rural Pennsylvania, northern tier. Even in my district in Beaver and Lawrence County, it's rather rural. And like, for people to get to Pittsburgh, if you don't have a car or somebody to take, you have to go to Pittsburgh someplace to a doctor's appointment or something. Like, it can be really a challenging thing for somebody to do.
That was State Senator Elder Vogel, who represents parts of Beaver, Lawrence, and Butler County, speaking to The Confluence earlier this week. The key word there in the senator's comment that I heard was access. How did that affect each of you? How did you have to adjust prior to and during, say, the first year or so of the pandemic? Stephanie, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so that was a time of huge transition for our team. We were providing about 5% telehealth care prior to the pandemic, and then very quickly with the lockdown and the public health emergency, we transitioned to about 95% virtual care. So it was a very large transition.
Ken, how did that affect you and your colleagues at Children's?
Well, in the first month of 2020, we had done about 500 telemedicine visits. By April, we had done 95,000.
Wow.
And so we had to pivot very quickly to make sure that patients and parents of patients, our patients, were getting the right advice and the right care. It affected us a lot. But the main thing I think that we all learned was the public health emergency allowed us to see patients at home. We weren't allowed to do that prior to the lockdown. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, patients had to go to a facility like a specialty care center to be able to get remote telemedicine visits. So the PHE made a big difference to us.
Mm-hmm. Heather, how did sort of the switchover or the strong emphasis on telehealth affect you?
It has actually been incredibly great for me, you know, especially in the first year of the pandemic, because I am so high risk. I was really avoiding any and all interactions with people outside of my household that I could. But because of my disability, health issues pop up throughout that first year that were not COVID related. And so knowing that I could be seen from my house and not have to risk those interactions in a healthcare facility, mm-hmm, took such a weight off my back. Mm-hmm. And even continuing now, while I'm still high risk and still limiting my interactions to a somewhat lesser extent, being able to be seen in my own house has still been something that I've continued to take advantage of and plan to continue in the future.
Right. So it affected you in your own care, but also I assume it affected you in your professional work.
It definitely did. Mm-hmm. Yes. Being involved in caregiving and being a patient, there is so much overlap there, and being able to do it from home just made things so much easier.
Stephanie, we heard Ken talk about the number of patients before the pandemic and then tens of thousands, in months after the pandemic and the shutdown started. What percentage of your counselors saw folks virtually before and then during?
Yeah, I think I might have added that we switched to about 95% telehealth, and pre-pandemic we were at about 5% telehealth. So it really, has become the preferred method for delivering care. I think at this point, however, now that the waivers have been lifted, we are seeing a preference for in-person counseling services. So most people are now doing a hybrid approach. So,
all right, Ken, you're the medical director of digital health at Children's, as I mentioned at the beginning. Were you already prepared? Did you have to ramp up?
Well, we definitely had to ramp up, but luckily we had the infrastructure already. So we had video embedded in our EMR. We were able to just make sure that our IT people, we have a great team here, were able to switch things over. So we had to create some videos and some cheat sheets for parents and providers to know how to use the system, but we had the infrastructure. We have a great app, the UPMC Children's app. It's so super intuitive. It was good before the pandemic, and now we've sort of fine-tuned it with lots of parent input. And if you go onto the app, it can be downloaded from the iOS and depending on whether it's Android or iOS. On that, you can do online scheduling. We didn't have that before. And the ability to do online scheduling really makes things convenient for parents and for patients. You can go in, figure out where the slots are, and, book your own appointment. But people have to have the app to do that, or they can go to the CHP website.
Mm-hmm. Heather, how much of an adjustment was it for you? Did you have to adjust to telehealth? I mean, COVID aside, but the fact that telehealth was there and was maybe the best tool for you, did you have to adjust much to it?
Honestly, there was almost zero adjustment for me. I am pretty much a child of the digital age. I was already working virtually at that point. I've been on the internet for years, and it was honestly pretty seamless for me. And I had already developed a relationship with my doctors over the years where I would call in rather than being seen in person, because it is a huge ordeal for me to get in physically to the office. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not feeling well, it's a huge ordeal times 1,000. So telehealth, rather than having to call in, actually was easier. They could see me. I can talk more seamlessly.
Ken and Stephanie, I want to get to you. Heather brought up something very important. She said digital age. Ken and Stephanie, did you find that maybe younger patients adjust better since Heather mentioned the digital age? Ken, we'll start with you.
So I wanted to ask Heather, in your role, the work that you do, how do you cope with people who are not as well adjusted to the digital tools that you might be? There's like this social determinant of health. We thought that the digital age would get rid of some of those. And what I'm finding is what my colleagues are finding is actually there are some people for whom it's worse because they don't have the money for Wi-Fi. Their cellular data is expensive. How do you cope with that in your role as an advisor?
Yeah, that is a very good point. Especially working in caregiving where you are talking to older adults at times, they're definitely less familiar with digital and telehealth. And we have just done the best that we can to walk them through it and provide phone options in place of video if that's what they're more comfortable with. It's just kind of meeting people where they are and doing the best that you can to provide alternatives that work for them.
Stephanie, so did you find that maybe younger patients adjust better, since Heather did mention the digital age?
So one of the forms of therapy that's not well adapted to telehealth is actually, you know, child therapy, specifically art therapy, play therapy. Those are highly interactive modes of counseling. So that has been a challenge, and we have continued to provide in-person care for those populations simply because it does seem to work best. But there are other things like parent-child interaction therapy, you know, for family counseling, and those have become adapted, you know, by utilizing you know, cameras such as these. We can actually have better outcomes by working with parents and children directly in their own home environments. So, you know, there are definitely pluses and minuses with, you know, in-person and virtual care. But much to what Heather is describing with older folks, you know, there can be barriers to access that exist with whether they have a cell phone, whether they can use that cell phone. So we definitely, you know, our administrative enrollment process definitely takes measures to include them and allow them to come in person if they need to have some support in filling out what would otherwise be paperless, you know, a virtual enrollment process. So, you know, we're always looking at ways that we can continue to provide care, especially to those like elderly populations who might be even more so suffering during the pandemic with things like loneliness and, right, you know, all of the things that happen from that.
You're listening to a conversation on the Confluence about the future of telehealth. I'm joined by Stephanie Weekstrom, Heather Tomko, and Ken Nischel. Senator Vogel is sponsoring a bill regarding telehealth, as he has every legislative session since 2018. It defines telemedicine, offers guidelines outlining who can provide telemedicine services, and will provide clarity around insurance company reimbursement for these services. Let's hear again from the senator.
That was the sticking point with insurance companies back several years ago. They didn't think they were going to be the same. You know, they wanted an in-person visit amount for the in-person visit to be the same for a telehealth visit. That was one of the sticking points. We worked through that and got that issue resolved.
So that was Senator Vogel. So your thoughts on the legislation, including reimbursement, the same amount for in-person as it is for telehealth. Ken?
So I think that CMS has played a big role in this. You know, CMS have come out with guidelines that have basically said that it is the same price, you know, same billing for in-person as telemed. But one of the things I think that's really important, especially for our elder listeners to understand, is if you've tried to do an audio-visual connection and it's failed, either because you couldn't quite work it or it didn't quite work the way you wanted it to, you can flip to an audio only, and still the insurances will pay the same amount. And this is important because it means that care is still delivered and you can still counsel, you can still explain. A lot of my patients actually love telemedicine because they say they get more face-to-face time with me looking at them rather than sitting there with my back to them while I'm typing on a computer. Heather, have you found that your doctors are looking at you and talking to you for at least 20 to 30 minutes? So I think it is fair that the billing is equal for in-person and telemedicine, because at the end of the day, it's the quality of care that we're trying to improve.
Stephanie, you're nodding.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with Dr. Nischel. The quality of care, and it has been well studied at this point. I know in behavioral and mental health care that the outcomes are, you know, completely equivalent, whether it's in person or virtual. And whenever we are looking at value-based care, you know, there's a lot of push to move to a value-based model where we are improving our outcomes. And so with that in mind, you know, I see every reason to continue having equal reimbursement.
Heather, do you think that patients get more FaceTime, as Dr. Ken was alluding to?
You know, I think it really is true. I mean, I'm very lucky in that I have found a great team of doctors, so I don't want to put them down in any way. I've had nothing but great interactions. But, you know, being able to really devote your attention to the person through the screen, I do feel like I have more of that one-on-one FaceTime with my providers through telemedicine.
Mm-hmm. Ken, what kind of clarity do you think providers need to continue offering telehealth? Is it straightforward now or still more questions?
No, I think one of the things that I wanted to point out is not every patient type or case mix does well with telehealth. You know, there are some patients that need a physical exam. Now, the question is can we provide centers local to a population where they can get the testing done by a nurse or something, and then the doctor can provide counseling with all that data? Mm-hmm. We need to have a hybrid system to provide a robust data for the provider to give good care. And I think that is the way forward. You know, as Stephanie was saying, a hybrid model.
Mm-hmm. Stephanie, what clarity do you need and your colleagues?
Yeah, so this is something that's very relevant to the Counseling and Wellness Center right now. We are launching psychiatric services as of May 1st. So, of course, we've become very familiar with the Ryan Haight Act, which does, you know, provide for the necessity to have an in-person visit prior to having a controlled substance prescribed to a patient. So I think that's what Ken might be, you know, one of the things he might be talking about there. And you know, that so the collaboration with in-person providers is highly relevant and necessary so that we're both serving our patients well and ensuring that they continue to have access to care, because, you know, I think that in-person requirement might leave some people behind, especially those who are in the more rural communities and, you know, maybe a little less in the city of Pittsburgh where there are so many options for providers. But working together is of the utmost importance.
Stephanie, I'm curious. We've been talking about impact on care for the recipients, for the patients. But what about on the providers themselves? Do you get a sense of how the increased use of telehealth has impacted them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So at the Counseling and Wellness Center, whenever we did make that switch to virtual care, we started to become very curious about the impact that that had on our providers. And, you know, interestingly, that wasn't something that was so widely studied as the quality of the care itself. So we looked at whether a clinician was providing in-person care, telehealth care, or a hybrid model. And we did see a slightly increased burnout rates with clinicians who were doing telehealth care only. And, you know, especially those who are doing telehealth care from home. So there does seem to be something that happens, whether, you know, I can think of so many reasons for why people might be a little bit more burned out when they're working from home with so many other competing demands. Children, you know, managing their households in addition to managing their workloads. So,
Yeah. Ken, so rural's gotten mentioned, but there's also transportation, access to cars. And let's face it, people come from all over, whether it's in the city itself, and transportation might be an issue, suburbs, or out of state. People come from all over to Children's. How does telehealth play into that?
So, look, there are some regulations about out of state. If you see a patient who's from another state where you don't have a license, you can advise them as to what can be done. Once they visit you and they become a physical patient, you can then provide care ongoing via telehealth, but you can't do that unless they come in person. We at the moment provide care, you know, right across the state, and we do it with the patient, but we also do it with a local provider. So sometimes a local provider needs that extra bit of expertise. So we're able to do that. And that's how we're working it.
Heather, I want to get your thoughts briefly, please, before we run out of time.
I think transportation is also a huge issue for disabled people. There is such a lack of accessible transportation. And I'm someone who does live out in the suburbs. My doctors are mainly in Oakland. So arranging accessible transportation, finding someone who's able to go with me, and dealing with the commute time is almost a day, basically. So telehealth is a huge access win for many disabled people.
And we have 1 minute to go, so just about 15, 20 seconds for each of you. When you think about the future of telehealth, how would you like to see it change, maybe grow? Ken, start with you, about 20 seconds.
So look, the first thing is at UPMC Children's, we want to be the hospital at home, you know, as much as we can. We want to be that hospital at home. We want our parents and patients to use our app, do online scheduling. That's the way how we can improve the services, get their feedback, and really make a difference in this hybrid world that we find ourselves in.
Heather, about 20 seconds. How would you like to see it grow, change?
I think the hybrid role is exactly the way to see it, making sure that there are both virtual and in-person options so that everyone, including people with disabilities, can access the care that they need.
And last 15 to 20 seconds for you, Stephanie.
Yeah, so the Counseling and Wellness Center of Pittsburgh, we definitely plan to continue to provide both in-person counseling solutions as well as virtual care. So, you know, we definitely want to provide both.
Stephanie Weekstrom is founder and psychotherapist at the Counseling and Wellness Center of Pittsburgh. Heather Tomko is a disability advocate and outreach coordinator for the National Center on Family Support. And Dr. Ken Nischel is the medical director of digital health at UPMC Children's. Thanks to all of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. If you have any suggestions for topics for our Friday conversations, email our team, confluence@wesa.fm. Thanks to our team, Emma Furry, Laura Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.